Trump administration has a miraculous turnaround, but I don't see that happening, unfortunately, unless Americans put pressure on it.
And what do you want to see happen right now, Feroz? You have Netanyahu coming for a series of days. He's meeting with President Trump today. He's meeting with Vance and Republican leaders tomorrow. He's meeting with Marco Rubio. What do you want to see come out of this meeting and what's happening in Doha, the Hamas-Israeli negotiators?
Well, just like under the Biden administration, I'd like the United States to be a country where the law matters. Benjamin Netanyahu is an accused war criminal, so should Donald Trump, so was Joe Biden. But the United States should be a place where we apply our laws to ourselves. That's the whole purpose of the law. It's completely illegal to continue to arm chronic and obstinate human rights abusers like Israel. And we should stop doing that. I don't expect the Trump administration will all of a sudden think that the law matters, given its behavior. The Biden administration also never came to this reasonable conclusion. But the American people don't have to accept that we live in a lawless country where the government can just do whatever it wants. That's not the case. We have the power to act. We have the power to pressure the administration. We have the power to pressure our own congresspeople.
We have to leave it there. Dr. Feroz Sidwa, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Surgeon who volunteered in Gaza. We'll link to your piece for the Council on Foreign Relations.
You are listening to KBOO, Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The Executive Committee meets on the second Thursday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Strike for Our Rights, presenting a screening of the documentary Union on June 23rd at the Clinton Street Theater. The film chronicles the efforts of a group of warehouse workers as they launch a grassroots union campaign at an Amazon fulfillment center. All proceeds go to the Strike for Our Rights Strike Fund. Tickets and info at cstpdx.com.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up in the KBOO Evening News, Oregon creates the first statewide recycling and waste prevention system.
This week is the fifth consecutive week of Portland and national protests against the Immigration and Customs Enforcement actions in Portland and the United States.
And Trump signed the so-called Big Beautiful Bill into action on the 4th of July.
Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, July 7th, 2025. I'm Terrence Burns.
And I'm Dave Johnson. Oregon is now the first state to require paper and packaging producers to pay fees into a statewide recycling and waste prevention system. The Recycling Modernization Act went live last week, which is when large companies that sell paper or packaging in Oregon had to start paying into the system. A few other states have also passed laws requiring businesses to share the cost of managing packaging waste. The Oregon program is the first to officially launch. According to the Circular Action Alliance, or CAA, to whom producers are required to register and report covered materials, the act was designed to make Oregon's recycling system more efficient, equitable, and environmentally responsible. It should do this: reduce waste and improve recycling rates, ensure producers share responsibility for managing the end of life of their products, and support a more sustainable and circular economy. Cities with more than 4,000 residents will need to start offering recycling and to accept those same materials. Local and out-of-state businesses with global revenue of $5 million or more will need to pay those producer fees to help cover recycling services. This new recycling system came out of the legislation passed in 2021. The law requires recyclables to go to so-called responsible end markets, businesses that recycle materials in a way that doesn't have major environmental or public health consequences. Kim Holmes, executive director of Circular Action Alliance, said, quote, "There is no struggle in finding end markets. We have homes for all the materials we currently have," end quote.
On Thursday last week, the House passed the One Big Beautiful Act. As promised, on Friday, July 4th, Trump signed the act into law. The act touches almost every aspect of life and basic needs in the United States. The act will gut health care for hundreds of thousands of people living in the United States. The bill puts in place a new work requirement in order to qualify for health insurance. Adults 19 to 64 to prove that they are working on or volunteering 80 hours a month to enroll in Medicaid or maintain their coverage. The bill also requires that some Medicaid recipients, about 40% of OHP members, will have to do more frequent eligibility checks to keep their coverage. Oregon State Health Authority estimates up to 200,000 people in Oregon could lose their health care due to work requirements or people having issues filling out paperwork so frequently. The increased eligibility checks will cost the state around $100 million to implement. The bill puts restrictions on local taxes that are used to fund Medicaid programs. Oregon State Health Authority estimates that Oregon may lose over $1 billion in funding for health care per year due to this cut. If legislators can't figure out how to replace that tax, major services will have to be cut or members will have to be cut. The bill also imposes a ban on Medicaid payments to Planned Parenthood and other organizations that provide abortions. Planned Parenthood already has a ban against using federal funding to pay for abortions, but they rely on federal funding to pay for other basic services that they provide to low-income and marginalized people. Many Planned Parenthood clinics around the nation and around Oregon will likely be forced to close. Marketplace insurance rates will have to go up as well. The bill instates a similar work requirement to qualify for SNAP assistance. The bill also cuts funding for food assistance sharply. Many states will have to take on a lot of the funding for this program, which was previously from the federal government. In Oregon, 1 in 6 people access SNAP benefits every month. Oregon will need to find alternative funding, cut benefits, or stop the program altogether. It also prohibits the USDA from increasing the SNAP value, even as inflation occurs.
The bill will strip environmental programs, taking away green energy incentives. The Inflation Reduction Act, one of Biden's core agenda items, has been slashed. The act had previously promised Oregon almost $200 million in federal funds to stop climate change. The bill stops federal tax credits for people buying electric cars, making home or more energy efficient, and it restricts programs that seek to limit carbon emissions from the industry. The bill also requires the bill also withdraws funds for greenhouse gas reporting programs. Lindsay Skolton, political director at the Oregon League of Conservation Voters, calls it the, quote, "most anti-environment and anti-climate bill in history." Department of Education will discontinue subsidized loans. Pell Grant eligibility has been expanded for short-term job training programs. Meanwhile, Grad Plus loans will be completely eliminated. More than 8% of Portland State University's total number of enrolled grads, about 400 grad students, paid for their education with this program, which they will no longer have access to. Student loan borrowers will be eliminated, will be limited, in pausing payments due to unemployment or financial hardship. The bill's clause on selling national parks was removed before the bill was passed. However, the bill orders an increase in logging by 75% over the next decade, a number that may not be realistic. But Oregon counties will not get a cut of any of the land that is logged. Many rural Oregon communities depend on the subsidy cut that the government pays out on the national land that is logged to fund schools and basic infrastructure. The bill also introduces tax and fees on renewable energy projects. The bill rescinds up to $150 million that was previously allocated to protect old growth and maturing forest. The bill also fully funds military housing, military health care, and benefits. The bill also funds several nuclear defense and offense programs.
On the 4th of July, some decided to celebrate the U.S.'s supposed independence from fascist monarchy by protesting the violence and abductions perpetrated by the still all-too-fascist Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency and the Trump administration. The ICE protests have been going on for weeks, despite efforts on the city's part to keep their camps repeatedly. The night of the 4th of July, protesters and allies defended themselves from intermittent raids from ICE and police. A pile of munitions from the street formed as protesters cleaned the streets after each round, gathering hundreds of rubber bullets and pepper bullet shells. Tear gas and brutal arrests that resulted in protesters bleeding from the head. One arrest was made when a girl was caught drawing on plywood with crayons by ICE agents. Media outlets continue to miss the fact that these people are still protesting peacefully, and the most violence that anyone has seen from the protesters is throwing the ICE agents' own tear gas canisters back at them. Hannah Francis has more on this story.
On the 4th of July, many people went down to the ICE facility to show their support for the protesters and to voice frustration with the Immigration and Customs Enforcement actions in Portland and the United States. There were several violent arrests made that night.
Here, big, huge cloud of tear gas, came around the outside of it and saw probably one of the more brutal arrests I've seen ever. And I mean, I was in the 2020 protests and everything. Blood on his face. It's visible here on the sidewalk. Quite a few splatters, and they carried him in a really inhumane way. He was clearly in a lot of pain, and then there was a medical response, and I'm assuming an ambulance took that person away. So this is not the first time that ICE has been extremely brutal unnecessarily.
He said that this is some of the most brutal instances of the ICE and police arrests that he has seen before, especially considering that many people are being arrested for what are misdemeanors at worst. I spoke with someone who's been down at the ICE facility protesting for about 3 weeks. They told me about the events of the day and of recent events in general.
I don't know. The wheelchairs have been amazing. We have 8, 10, 15 disabled comrades in all forms of mobility devices and mobility aids that will come out here and put themselves on the line with everybody else. And this isn't just like a fight where you're going to get hurt. This is a life and death fight for a lot of them. They are putting their lives on the line, and they are met with force that is unreal. There is no way that somebody in a wheelchair with a mobility device can be any threat to the feds or to the PPB, and yet they meet us with so much force and violence. It's unjustifiable. Absolutely unjustifiable.
Yeah. Will you tell me also a little bit about the veteran presence about that?
We have a lot of vets, a lot of disabled vets. And actually, this building right here is full of disabled vets. And a lot of them are having a really, really hard time, the residents over here, because they're getting gassed right along with us, whether they're on the streets or not. You know, they have PTSD and they came down here for some quiet, and they're being met with flashbangs at 2-3 o'clock in the morning, and it's terrifying them, it's terrifying their animals and their pets and their children. There was a newborn, like, we had our camp right in front of a apartment, and there was a newborn right upstairs, and our biggest fear was that the feds would come out and gas us and go for us, and that newborn would be collateral damage. And that's all these people in these apartments are, is collateral damage. They want to attack the protesters, and they're hurting the community, and they don't care because they're not from here. They're from Texas. And while they're up here beating us, somebody else is down in their hometown beating their families and friends.
Join effort of Portland police and ICE agents continue to shoot pepper balls, rubber bullets, and deploy HC gas, a gas known to cause miscarriages and other reproductive health issues, and CS gas, which burns skin, lungs, and eyes into the crowd of protesters intermittently throughout the night. ICE is currently getting more funding from the Trump administration's so-called Big Beautiful Bill that was signed into action on the 4th of July. The protests continue. For KBOO News, I'm Hannah Francis.
Deadly Texas floods draw a federal response as the administration reduces emergency and weather services. States prepare to deal with cuts to schools, health care, and environmental protections, while Elon Musk launches a new political party. With that story and more, it's Farah Siddiqui with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
There was a debris line that had gone over the mailbox. It was an apocalyptic scene. I could see a crashed car, a kayak trapped underneath.
Former news anchor Casey Claiborne was vacationing in the Texas Hill Country when the Guadalupe River rose more than 25 feet, killing at least 70. President Donald Trump says he will probably visit this week and has already approved a disaster declaration. The flooding wiped out campsites, roads, and homes, and offers an early test of Trump cuts to weather staff and federal disaster aid. Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem says they'll upgrade outdated warning systems after residents said they had little time to escape. Five small Southwest Virginia mountain towns have lost $500,000 in federal funding for flood and pollution mitigation. Emma Kelly of Appalachian Voices says the EPA money would have paid for river walks and demolition of asbestos-laced buildings, based on what local people asked for.
So many of these projects were just like, can we please shore up a riverbank, put some native species in, and do some planning so that the storm waters don't wipe out our communities and our businesses. Without that, the storms, they're going to keep coming and the damages will continue to be unaddressed.
Former advisor Elon Musk broke with the president over the mega bill signed Friday and now says he'll start a political party. Musk calls the current system wasteful and undemocratic. The unpredictable tech billionaire's large following and massive war chest may help his America Party impact the midterms. The administration says the law's a win for taxpayers, but critics say it forces families into impossible trade-offs. Murad Awada of the New York Immigration Coalition says they're facing the intentional cruelty of deep cuts to safety net programs that redirect unprecedented billions towards migration enforcement.
17 million people stand to lose access to health care. Critical social safety net programs will face devastating cuts. More than 125,000 children in New York alone stand to lose the child tax credit simply because their parents are immigrants.
As school budgets tighten, some educators are calling out the Federal Department of Education for withholding over $6 billion already allocated by Congress. Kate Diaz with the Connecticut Education Association says the state's being shorted $50 million.
We are talking about teachers who teach English, our ESOL teachers. We're talking about social workers, school psychologists, before and after school program workers, paraprofessionals.
Connecticut will hold a special legislative session in September to cover the gaps. Some lawmakers say the state shouldn't have to fix what they call federal negligence. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent says countries without finalized trade deals will revert to higher tariff levels August 1st. After months of turbulence tied to shifting trade policies, the stock markets are near record highs. By contrast, the dollar has fallen more so far in 2025 than any similar period in the last four decades. I'm Farah Siddiqui for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an in-depth report with the Oregon Arts Watch Executive Director, Laura Grimes. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. Then at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Tonight's weather will be a high of 86, right about now, and a low of 59 degrees tonight. Tomorrow we will have a high of 90 degrees and a low of 60 degrees. Today, in 1911, Joe Hills, The Preacher and the Slave, a song written as a parody of Christian hymn, The Sweet By and By, was added to the International World Workers' Little Red Songbook. The quote of the day is from that song, quote, "Long-haired preachers come out every night, try to tell you what's wrong and right. But when asked about something to eat, they will answer in voices so sweet, you will eat, by and by, in the glorious land above the sky. Work and pray, live on hay, you'll get pie in the sky when you die."
While Congress continues mulling over President Trump's fiscal agenda, part of the White House budget proposes to essentially defund tribal colleges and universities, reducing federal funding by nearly 90%. With that story and more, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. While Congress continues mulling over President Trump's fiscal agenda, part of the White House budget proposes to essentially defund tribal colleges and universities, reducing federal funding by nearly 90%. KJZZ's Gabriel Pietrazio reports on how Arizona schools are bracing for devastation.
Among them is San Carlos Apache College, which is not your typical campus. The tribe has been building toward this dream of making higher education more accessible on the reservation for the last decade plus. That vision from San Carlos Apache Chairman Terry Rambler is still a work in progress, but one he's been contributing to in ways big and small.
So we asked the chairman if we could borrow his podium. We didn't know he had more than one.
Lisa Utsi is vice president and provost of San Carlos Apache College. She's talking about the first commencement in May 2020.
And so the next year, I had texted him or something, and I was just like, hey, can we borrow your podium again? But then I realized we found it, and he was like, just keep it.
That's been a theme for the chairman when it comes to piecemealing this makeshift campus together in the heart of San Carlos by slowly turning empty tribally owned buildings, including one home to old council chambers, into classrooms.
Actually, a lot of the artwork on the walls are things that the chairman donated.
Chartered in 2014, then officially opening its doors 3 years later, the college has graduated over 100 students.
I joke I was leaving, in a way, the most fully funded, built out, oldest tribal college.
Utsi used to be dean of faculty for Diné College, which was founded on the Navajo Nation in 1968.
To come to a college with no funding, no classrooms, no faculty.
By this fall, Utsi says the college expects to employ 8 full-time teachers and enroll 500 students, but they and another 36 indigenous schools across more than a dozen states are still dreading the worst. Trump wants to cut their federal funding by almost 90%, down to a collective $22 million. For National Native News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio reporting from the San Carlos Apache Reservation.
U.S. senators have a deadline of July 18th to decide whether to eliminate federal funding for public media. South Dakota Republican Senator Mike Round sits on the Senate Committee on Indian Affairs. He says supporting tribal radio stations is a priority through the process. Brown says White House counterparts have agreed to work with congressional leaders seeking to keep tribal-operated radio functional through the process.
For our Native American reservations, there are some small radio stations in South Dakota and in some other states that really rely on some of that national public broadcasting funds to survive. We know that you want to revert some of those funds, but if you do that, some of these small stations that really provide emergency services information and community information, they may not survive.
Over the weekend, Arizona Governor Katie Hobbs visited the command center for the Oak Ridge Fire in Window Rock, Arizona, to get updates and offer her support. The Oak Ridge Fire is on the Navajo Nation near St. Michael's. Hobbs says her administration will continue to coordinate with the tribe to contain the fire and with recovery efforts. Tribal officials, including Navajo Nation President Boo Nigren and Navajo Nation Council Speaker Crystalyn Curley, met with Hobbs during the visit. As of Monday morning, the fire was covering more than 10,900 acres. It started on June 28th. Officials say the fire has not grown significantly in recent days and additional growth is not expected. Efforts will soon be shifting to the recovery phase of the fire. Officials say in the coming weeks, it will be critical to assess the fire's impacts on the land, vegetation, wildlife, and cultural sites. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A Chinese man from Happy Valley was arrested by the FBI on Friday, July 4th. Yance Chen, 38, was arrested in Houston, Texas for allegedly carrying out several acts for China's Ministry of State Security, MSS. Along with Chen, Liren Ryan Lai, 39, was arrested after traveling to the United States on a tourist visa from China. The two men allegedly worked together to gain assets for the MSS, trying to recruit U.S. service members while gathering intelligence on U.S. Navy and military installations. The two men have been charged with violating Title 18, United States Code Section 951, which makes it a crime to operate within the U.S. as an agent for a foreign government without notifying the United States Attorney General. Lai allegedly recruited Chen around 2021 to work for the MSS, according to the complaint. The case also alleges that in January of 2022, while in Guangzhou, China, their work progressed as they worked together to facilitate a dead drop payment of at least $10,000 on behalf of the Chinese Intelligence Service, while coordinating with other assets to leave the backpack containing the cash in a day-use locker in Livermore, California. During the early parts of 2022, while still working in China, Chen was allegedly tasked by Lai and other agents of the MSS to contact a U.S. Navy member on social media. In 2025, Chen was able to secure a tour with that military member aboard the USS Abraham Lincoln, which allowed him to provide the MSS with information about the service member, according to the U.S. Department of Justice. Between 2022 and 2023, Chen had been instructed by China's Ministry of State Secretary to visit U.S. Navy installations in Washington State and recruiter's office in San Gabriel, California, where he took photos of a bulletin board that contained the names, programs, and hometowns of recent naval recruits, with most of them listing their hometown as China. If convicted, both men face fines up to $250,000 and prison sentences of up to 10 years.
Anti-hunger groups say Oregon will have to find the money to cover huge cuts in the SNAP program contained in the Republican budget bill. Suzanne Potter has more on the story.
Oregon lawmakers would have to find an extra $850 million in the state budget starting in 2028 to cover costs to SNAP in the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill just signed by President Donald Trump. Alex Agdai with Partners for a Hunger-Free Oregon says the bill is projected to cause an estimated 100,000 Oregonians to lose SNAP coverage by 2034. He says policymakers will face some hard choices going forward.
We believe that there is no other option than to find the funding, because our state simply cannot abandon the 1 in 8 of all Oregonians that rely on this program to feed their families.
Agdai adds the bill makes more people subject to a work requirement, even though 83% of Oregon Trail Card users are already employed. It also requires people to verify their eligibility more often, and it cuts the amount the federal government reimburses for the administrative costs of SNAP. Agdai says low-income families will face similar paperwork obstacles to maintain coverage under the Oregon Health Plan because of huge cuts to Medicaid.
Let's make no mistake, this bill will kill. The level of cuts that the SNAP program will experience, in addition to Medicaid and other essential services, is frankly unheard of, and the impact in Oregon will stretch far across the state.
The legislature just concluded its two-year session, but lawmakers will begin to address these issues in the short session next February. For Oregon News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
A new campaign asks young people to help their parents recognize misinformation. False claims about climate change are rampant on social media. Dr. Anthony Lizowitz has more on the story with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Decades ago, public service announcements asked parents, "It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?" But a recent campaign to fight online misinformation about climate change turned that script on its head by asking young people, "It's 10 p.m. Do you know what your parents are scrolling?"
A lot of the reasons why we try to instill comedy and humor into our videos is because people are more likely to engage and more likely to learn and laugh at the same time.
Javi Garcia is with the Gas Leaks Project, which teaches people about the harms of fossil fuels. The group partnered with the nonprofit Green Latinos to produce videos and social media posts in English and Spanish, encouraging people to help their parents recognize false and misleading content. He says Latinos are particularly exposed to climate misinformation, in part because they often get their news from social media, where false claims are rampant. Yet at the same time, many live in areas with a high risk of climate disasters.
I'm from Puerto Rico, and we see the effects of climate change happening firsthand. You know, beaches that are being swallowed by the water, more intense hurricanes.
So he says it's especially important to counter climate misinformation in Latino communities. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team